Now, on to today's On the Couch interview. And imagine this. Imagine coming off a motorbike at high speed, hitting a tree stump, suffering huge internal injuries, then waiting 36 agonizing hours for proper medical care. Imagine spending a number of days in a coma, facing grueling rehab, finally being released from hospital, only to suffer a catastrophic relapse. And then imagining suffering from post-traumatic stress that has left you fearful of injuries, fearful of medical procedures. And then imagine getting back onto the bike and not just riding it again, but entering one of the world's most grueling off-road races. That, my friends, is not an imaginary story. It is the lived experience of the guest who is with me on the couch today via phone. Her name is Kirsten Luntman, and she is the first South African woman and only the third in history to finish the Dakar Rally on a motorbike. She crossed the finish line earlier this month, having completed over 7,800 kilometers of off-road driving through Saudi Arabia. They left from the shores of the Red Sea, did a course across the country, finishing near the capital city of Riyadh. Kirsten, it's great to have you with us on Cape Talk. Welcome home to South Africa, and congratulations on your achievement. Has it sunk in yet?
Oh, thank you so much, and yes, thanks for that introduction. It's probably the best introduction I've had. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
I'm speechless. I'm happy to be home, and thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, we so appreciate your time, because I know you are in demand from everybody who wants a piece of you this week. I mean, Kirsten, when did you first learn to ride a motorbike? Let's start at the beginning of the story. How old were you?
I was, I grew up a total tomboy, and closely with my cousin Stefan, who's 3 years younger than me. He got on a motorbike at the age of four, and I hadn't got a motorbike then. And we lived in the same complex, and when he got his motorbike, I nagged my dad, and I remember pulling out a centerfold of a magazine of a little KTM SX50, and I said to my dad, I want one of these. And I didn't stop nagging him. And then we made a bet, and at the time I was training to be a provincial swimmer. I was started swimming at a really young age, and my dad said, if you make the Southern Cross in provincial squad, I'll buy you a motorbike. And needless to say, I won the bet, and that's when it started. I just started as fun riding around the complex, which had a lot of open space at the time, mm-hmm. in slops, T-shirt, not the safest, shorts and T-shirt, just puttering around for fun. And then, like everyone says, the bug bit, and it went from that to riding every weekend, you know, getting fully kitted out, and then going from there to racing, and from racing to doing really well. And it's just gone from fun into profession, and I'm very lucky to be able to call my profession having a jewel every day on my motorbike. I'm very lucky.
I mean, they say choose a job that you love and you'll never do a day's work in your life. It sounds like you've made that a reality for yourself, Kirsten. But how often do you have other women sharing that space with you? Because I know you have been, in many cases, the first woman ever to finish a major race time after time. And when you look around you at the typical field, how common or uncommon is it to see other women on bikes next to you?
To be honest with you, there are never women. So when I am racing against other women, I'm like, this is weird. So it's still growing, it's developing. It is really cool to have another female there racing alongside you. It's never more than one, two, or three. I really want to develop the sport so that and promote it so that we have more women, because like to be able to race in a woman's all women's category class. I don't know what that feels like. There's never been a all women's category class in the sport of extreme enduro, and at Dakar. You know, we were placed in the ladies' classification, but it wasn't like a class where you win prize money and you put on a podium type thing. You know, like it is with the guys. So it's changing. If you look at the future, you look at the kids in South Africa that are riding motorbikes now. There are as many girls as there are boys. So it's definitely changing, and it's just taken a generation of mine and the riders like myself and Lai's son to get younger generations on the bike from a young age, like the guys have been, you know, and develop them into the racing. And, you know, there is clubs around South Africa worldwide that are pushing the development of females in motorsports so that in the future, call it 20 years' time, I think it will be pretty equal. There'll be across the board full-on classes where women and men, you know, there's classes, and then, you know, and then a general classification of women against the men, which is what we're pushing towards as well.
I mean, it's phenomenal to hear you say that we've made as much progress as that already, because I thought you were going to say there's still a huge mountain to climb. It sounds like we have already tackled the lower slopes, which is really gratifying. And of course, your achievement and that of Tay, who was the other South African woman in the field at Dakar, is a game changer, because it gives those young girls a role model to look up to and say, that's what I want to do, that's where I want to be, and someone else has already done it, so there's no reason I can't. Now, Kirsten, 100%. that's part of the story. The other part of the story for you is the very personal one of what it took to get you to Dakar, sitting on that bike at the start race, because the race, as I mentioned in the intro, back in 2013, you had an accident which nearly ended your life. Can you briefly tell us what happened in Botswana?
So it was the Botswana Desert 1000, which is 500. It's a 2-day race. You do 500 kilometers on the first day, 500 kilometers on the second day. And I had got through the first day of racing. The race started on Thursday. The second day of racing was now on the Friday. And the quads and bikes, quads were on their separate routes. Bikes were on their own separate routes, so that we didn't come together in the racing.
Yeah.
And we switched tracks. So the quads were on day one, and we switched. So the next day we were on their tracks. And there was a double groove in the sand. It's been quite sandy terrain out there by Gaborone. And there was a rider in the left-hand lane in front of me, and I was in the right-hand lane, you know, keep left, pass right, general rules of the road. And also they had the inside line, because there was an S-bend coming up in front of them, and I had been sitting behind the rider for quite a while.
Yeah.
And as racing goes, you race to pass. We're there to make up positions. We're not there to ride for fun. But we are, but you know it's a race.
Yeah.
And I thought that they were going to hold their line, because they had the inside line, and then last minute they hopped into my lane, and I had to slam on brakes, and it's been a dome-shaped rut. And, you know, nature of the sport, when you grab the front brakes, like on a bicycle, and in a dome-shaped rut, the bike front wheel washed. And I couldn't fall to the left because my front wheel had overtaken the back wheel. And then I fell to the right. And just to the right was that tree stump. I mean, if I'd fallen 10 centimeters before or 10 centimeters after, I probably would have just dusted myself up and carried on. But it impacted me on my lower abdomen area. And I immediately weed myself, and I was winded. I first had to get over the wind, and then I realized, okay, I can't get up, the pain's too sore. And like you mentioned in my introduction, with the complications of getting to a hospital, first they had to find us out there, which took them an hour and a half to eventually get to us. Then there was complications going from the pits to the hospital, with there only being one ambulance on standby, and there were so many other accidents that day. Then once I got to the hospital, they touched wood, and thank God, you know, they didn't know what was wrong with me, nor could they pick up what was wrong with me. They did sonar, CT scans, X-rays. They did everything that they could do. They didn't pick up what was wrong with me. But what's funny is, if you and I look at my X-rays with an untrained eye, you can actually see the big white cloud mass going from my lower abdomen up to my ribs. And they didn't pick it up, which like my doctor said, was a blessing in disguise, because if they did, they would have opened me up and have no idea what to do with me, and I would have needed blood, and there was no blood in hospital at the time as well. So thank goodness they couldn't see that. But my contact and our boss from KTM South Africa, Francisco, had a contact with Dr. Hein van der Walt at the Unitas Hospital in Pretoria. And just from him requesting my blood test results, he knew exactly what I did, and he said, you need to get Kirsten out of there as quickly as possible. I eventually was air-vacked out and got home the next day back to Unitas, where my doctor was, Dr. Volkovich at Unitas in Pretoria, and I was operated on 36 hours later. 1 in 8 hours is critical. Eight hours is critical. 1 in 4 people survive what I had done. And the words from my doctor's mouth, how you are alive, I have no idea. And he said it makes him believe in a higher being, and that also brings that, when it's your time, it's your time, and it wasn't my time. And he also said my age and my fitness is what got me through. All my organs are gone septic. I just missed dialysis by the skin of my teeth. We managed to get me hydrated just in time. But I was put into an induced coma to control, to speed up my recovery. And then I was on life support because I was on so much morphine that it stopped my heart.
Sure.
For me, it was, not for me, for my family, it was 11 days of touch and go. For me, it was, I was sleeping. I had no idea. I only knew what had happened after me once I got out of hospital and back home. During the time of pregnancy, I was very frustrated. I wasn't, I was out, but yeah. It's a part of who I am. It's a part of the reason why I have done what I have done. Do I regret it? I never did it on purpose, certainly not. But no, I don't regret it because I woke up from that ordeal,
yeah.
And I swore to never take another day for granted. And as everyone says, live each day like it's your last. It's so true. Not many people get given a second chance on life, and I did. And in doing that, I thought, I want to ride my motorbike. I want to ride all over the world, and I want to do things that have never been done before. And in doing that, I went and competed in the World Extreme Enduro Series. I became the first female to finish extreme races all over the world. And then I got asked the question, what's next? and that's when Dakar came. And, after my accident, I swore never to go fast again on a motorbike. And I know that sounds silly. Motorbikes are fast motorbikes. But the extreme enduro that I do, it's very slow. I mean, the races I do, we average between 10, 15, and 20 Ks an hour for 10, 11, 12 hours a day on the motorbike. So it's very slow. It's very controlled. It's very technical. We ride in over the most technical terrain, like mountainous stuff. I don't know if you guys are in Cape Town.
Yep.
Picture riding up Lion's Head. You have the hike up Table Mountain.
Yep.
That really, really rocky hike up the side there. That's the stuff that we ride up. So, you know, stuff that you battle to walk up. We ride up and down stuff like that. I mean, that's to give you an idea what we ride. So it's very slow. It's very controlled. And that's why I enjoyed the enduro, because I wasn't going fast. You know, anything over fourth gear on my motorbike, I would just back off completely. And then I would get reminded of that fear, you know. And that had been a monkey on my back for all the years. 5 years later, I was like, I'm tired of this. You know, I need to get over this fear, because the part of the sport is to go fast. We race motorbikes, you know, even in the extreme enduros, we do have faster sections. And I felt like it was holding me back, and I think I thought to myself, it's time to face your fear. And then, a good friend of mine, Joey Evans, got back from the Dakar Rally in 2017. He raced motorbikes, had a passion for Dakar, mm-hmm. but working towards Dakar, just a normal guy who enjoyed riding. And then he had an accident. He got paralyzed, learned to walk again, and went into the Dakar Rally. So he did that, achieved an unbelievable achievement, finishing the Dakar in 2017. And then I bumped into him at KTM. And he said to me, you got to go do this. I mean, he's the most motivational, inspiring person. And he said to me, if there's anyone that can do it, it's you. And I was like, oh, but I'm scared, Joey. I've had my accident. And he literally laughed at me. He's like, check, I learned to walk again. You can do this. Face your fears. Come on. I pondered on the thought to myself for over a year, because I knew the biggest decision would be telling my parents, family, my friends, because they were affected the most, you know, in that accident. And, also I thought to myself I pondered on it for a year to myself, because, is this really what I want to do? And it took me quite a while to eat. And then once the seed had been planted with Joey, it just grew and grew and grew. And then end of 2018, I approached my sponsors locally here in South Africa, and they were all on board. But they said, you've got to get back into off-road racing, and that means you've got to go back to the Desert 1000, because that was a part of the national series. And in 2018, probably one of my hardest races now after Dakar, before Dakar, I went and went back to the Desert 1000, and I got my finishers medal. It was one of the hardest, probably the most emotional races I've done. Take that off, to get that done was a huge sense of relief, a huge accomplishment. And that was the start of my journey. And then 2 months after that race, I announced my preparation and my campaign towards Dakar 2020, and that was in August of 2018, Women's Month. And it took me 2.5 years a year of decide making, and then a year and a half of putting the plan together. And
And here you are.
Here we are, sitting now talking about finishing the Dakar. And a lot of people are like, what's next? And you know what's so weird is that I'm sitting here now, like it's been 2.5 years of this Dakar being on my mind, and now it's done. And I'm like, oh, well.
Now what?
What's happening now? What am I going to do now? Where am I going to go? What am I going to race? it's I can't believe it's done, and it was done so well from all aspects, and it's gone by in a blur, you know.
Kirsten, I mean, what went through your mind as you crossed the finish line? Did anything go through your mind, or was it just relief that you'd got to the end? How can you try and explain what you were feeling that day?
It was the biggest sense of relief. I can't even tell you, because you know I went to Dakar to overcome my fear of speed. I went there to overcome my fear of my accident, and in speed I had my accident, and with my accident I faced death. And every single day at Dakar, we came across very, very high speeds, and there were two deaths, and there were so many accidents. And it's so funny, like, you know, I'm a strong believer of we are creator of our own reality, and in no way did I wish for that, or did I ask for that. But, I mean, I can't control what happens at a race that we've never been to. But it's just like I had my eyes set on, in 2018, 2017, I worked towards Dakar 2020, and I went to one of the fastest Dakars that they've had in years, and one of the Dakars that had the most accidents in it. And, you know, something that I didn't want to face that. That's not what I wanted to come across, but it's what was given back to me. And in saying that, it was so hard, it was so emotional, but it made me face my fears head on, you know, and move past it. And stuff that I thought that I had dealt with, I hadn't, you know. And that's why for me, the Dakar was so emotional. It was like reliving that moment every day, again and again and again, for 12 days in a row, because I was scared for my life every day, and it was exceptionally emotional. And yes, it's one of the hardest races I've ever done because of what I faced every day because of the accident I had.
Kirsten, what a story. What an absolutely inspiring story. And congratulations to you again. Congrats as well to Tay Perry, who is the other South African female motorcyclist in the Dakar this year. What an achievement. What a huge inspiration to those little girls just starting out in the sport, who now don't just have a role model to look to, but a role model who's been there, done there, come back from huge injury, conquered her fears, and ticked the Dakar box. I can't wait to hear what's next once you've got your head around what's going to be next. And hope you'll pop into Cape Talk the next time you're in Cape Town. Kirsten Luttmann talking to us by phone there. Of course, she is the triumphant returning South African woman, first South African woman, and only the third woman in history to finish the Dakar rally on a motorbike. And what a story it is.